Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. We're starting again. We've been gone for a while.
I'm Esha Shibu and Tuma Shibu. So I thought that would be good for me.
So last time we finished, well, we started Parshas Mishpatim, and we did quite a few, whatever, not quite a few, but a few psukim at the beginning. And as we said as an introduction to Parshas Mishpatim, it's quite technical, goes through some of the laws that perhaps don't look so relevant to our day-to-day life, especially the beginning. The other part of Parshas Mishpatim is that every pasuk is very cryptic. It's sort of almost like in code form, where there's so much more, and the Gemara and the Mishnah and the Gemara elaborates tremendously on what's written in the Chumash, which means, it's an interesting thing, which means Parshas Mishpatim is the one parsha that more than other parshas bring the point that we need the oral part of Torah just as much as we need the written. And the oral, the written without the oral is totally incomplete. That's one of, actually the Chachamim say it's one of the reasons that Mishpatim comes right after Yisrael, the first set of halachas, so to speak, parsha, story, whatever it is in the Chumash, that comes right after the giving of the Torah, is this message that the Torah has two parts to it, the written Torah and the oral Torah, but they really work together. One without the other is totally incomplete. But what that means for us is that it's a little bit difficult, it's always a little bit challenging, it's very cryptic, and when you read the pasuk, sometimes you don't know what it's really talking about. That's why without Rashi, forget about it for sure. And even still, even with Rashi, sometimes we can still feel a little bit that we don't know exactly. So we'll try our best, as we say, and we'll go through as best as we can. Certain parts more in depth, certain parts a little bit more quickly, but we'll see how we go. Now we did start, and as we did last time, we did do the psukim which tell us about the Eved Ivri, the Hebrew slave, the Jewish slave, who, as we explained, there was a few ways he could become a slave. We said if he was either, he stole and didn't have money to pay back, and therefore the Beis Din sells him, or he is so poverty stricken that he sells himself. And the reason why that's a benefit to him is because when he sells himself, as we said last time, the master is responsible not only to supply him with his needs, his physical, his food, his lodging, but also for his family. So by selling himself, he's ensuring that his wife, his children also have what to eat, besides that he also has something to eat and he has somewhere to stay. So that's the benefit. Obviously, it would be a last resort. It's sort of the lowest, you know, you reach rock bottom, you have no choice. That's what you would do. We said it's a very far from ideal state because Hashem took us out of Egypt, redeemed us. We are essentially not slaves. The Jewish people are a free people. That's what we're meant to be. Being a slave is really doesn't go together with who we are. And that's why the Torah right away says that a Jewish slave is not a permanent condition. It can only last 6 years. Automatically, the seventh year, he is free. Unless the year of Yovel, the Jubilee year, which comes around every 50 years, and could be that his third year will be the Jubilee year, then he will go free then. So it's not a permanent state for any Jewish slave, and it's not an ideal, but it has benefits. The Torah, we said, chooses to do this first. We'll see today a little bit more in depth also, because it has a lot of tremendous lessons for us. The first and foremost being that we are not meant to be slaves. That's the lesson from it. That in truth, we are only we only should subjugate ourselves to Hashem, not to any other human being. This is a very, it's very clear how the halachas work, that we cannot put ourselves in this position permanently, and we really should try to avoid it at all costs. So this is one of the things that we can see amongst, but also on another simple level, as we said, we see here more than in other places in Torah, the dignity that we are meant to treat each other. Because on the rung of the social ladder, the lowest is a servant, is a slave. You know, if you have somebody who's a worker, or somebody who's a, you know, you go higher than a professional, whatever it is, even in the way we, as human beings, with our small, our superficial way of judging, but nevertheless, a slave is the lowest on the social ladder. In usual societies, he's treated terribly, looked down upon. Even if you're a good person, even if you treat your slave fairly, but how will you look at them? You will look down at them. And here the Torah shows us something very tremendous right away, that our civil laws, our sort of moral, ethical behavior between man and man is extremely different to the way of the world, which means that even somebody who is seemingly on the lowest end of the social ladder has to be treated with the same dignity as any other Jew. And this is chosen to be the first halachas that are taught, just to show us to the extent of how we have to treat each other, not just, again, not just practically, but our attitude, the way we look at another human being, how we think of them, how we judge them, so to speak. And this is an extremely important. And that's why the Torah starts straight away with these halachas. And as we said, when you just read it in the pasuk, it sounds so archaic. You know, Torah believes in slavery. As we said, and we mentioned, we're not going to go again into detail, but we said this, the way that this slave is treated is better than many workers that we have and many workplaces that we work in. This slave is treated a lot better. So the way Torah works is completely different. As we say, even in cases where the Torah is doing something which it doesn't want to do in the ideal, so to speak, and still it puts that into place. Okay, so we're not going to go into that vidivri at length. We did that, but we are going to move on a little bit, and we will have some lessons from him, because what I'd like to do is to read in the psukim just the next section. Yes.
When it says tiki tikne, so yeah. It was recommended to buy one.
Or? Well, no, it wasn't. That's a good question. It actually wasn't. It wasn't an ideal thing at all. According to everybody, it's not such a good thing even to buy a slave. Although, it's interesting, because if somebody's so poor and they have no choice, you are in a way doing them a chesed. So, yes, but in the ideal, it shouldn't happen. Because the truth is, the way Torah, we learn other halachas later on, what Torah does put into place is also other social infrastructure, such as the fact that we have to loan money to people, so that this shouldn't happen. That there's the concept of Shemitah and Yovel, especially where property reverts back to its original owner. There are many, many halachas within the fabric of the way that Torah works that, to hopefully that nobody should reach this stage. Unfortunately, we see from society today, perhaps, maybe somebody's not well, maybe somebody has an addiction. We don't know what could cause somebody to get to this stage where this would happen. But it shouldn't be the usual. It wasn't the usual, that's what it says. And it's, like we say, it's only unfortunate, but we make the most of it, you know, in that sense. Another interesting thing, and we did mention just a quick thing also, is because we said one of the things was the person is so poor that he sells himself. The other way that a person becomes a slave was if the person stole, do you remember we said, and they didn't have money to pay back. The Beis Din is permitted to sell the person so that they can have the money to pay back to the one who he has stolen from. So here we also see a very fascinating thing, and this is also within the Torah's way, and we'll get to it not today, but maybe next week. The Torah, we know, doesn't believe in prison system, right? The Torah has no prison system. The closest thing to a prison system is the Arei Miklat, right? Those cities of refuge, which is nothing like a prison. But we see here that what does the Torah want? This person who has done something, stealing, which is not the right thing to do, means that it's not just not the right thing, it means that he's not respecting the boundaries, he's not respecting the property, the space, everything of where he's meant to be, where somebody else's things. What do? We put him in a situation where we will rehabilitate him. We put him into a functional home, a home which is stable financially, not because everything is mazel, but what we mean here is stable financially because they're doing the right thing the right way. So this way, he will learn also how to be responsible that way. This is part of his rehabilitation. And what's the beauty of it also, as we said, is that he's a slave, so he's sold and he doesn't necessarily earn a salary, but his family is provided for. And that's a tremendous, tremendous thing, which means that while, you know, if you go into prison, your family, I don't know, they just have to somehow make do. Here, we're talking about where the owner has to provide the wife and the children with very good living conditions as well as food. So it's an incredible system in a way where the whole family can hopefully turn out a lot better off than when they started. And that's, again, shows you, it's quite incredible how the system works. So yeah, it's not ideal, but it does. Yeah. And it also was for quite a short period of time. They were only permitted, and then after the time of this destruction of the first base sanctuary, there was no such thing anymore. So it wasn't really for, and only from when they built the base, it was only for a short amount of time that it actually was even permitted. But the ideals are still there in a sense. Yeah, so quite an interesting thing. So I just want to read a few more psukim, like these are not easy. So go to page 253. Then we're going to come back to some of the beautiful ideas. On page 253, because we've already done, as we say, the actual Eved Ivri, we will see here, and this one, I'll be honest, politically correct it's not. This is a little bit hard to understand. This is something that we will all find a little bit difficult. But let's read the psukim, and as I said, this didn't happen often, and we'll see, as you read through the psukim, you will see why it didn't happen often, and that it really wasn't for as long as it seems. Okay, what is it? So we're talking here not about an adult, not about a man who's stolen or poverty-stricken, but about a young girl. Now, there's a concept in Torah where a father is permitted to sell his, so to speak, sell his daughter to be what we call a maidservant. And let's understand what this is. Okay, so let's look at the psukim, and then we'll see as best as we can. So it says on page 253 in Pasuk Zayin, V'chi yimkar ish es bitay la'ama. So if, when a man shall sell his daughter as a handmaiden, so she becomes a servant, first of all, now he's going to give us certain laws of how this all works. First of all, lo'y seitze kitzeis ha'avadim. She does not get released like the slaves get released. Now, this doesn't make any sense to us. Which slaves are we talking about? What does he mean? How do they get released that she's not getting released? It's very strange. So for this, you need Rashi, which is taken from the Gemara. And let's see what Rashi tells us. And we will discuss in a minute what this really means. But let's just see technically even what the pasuk means. So if you look into Rashi Zayin, so he says, V'chiyim kar ish es bitay la'ama, so when a man shall sell his daughter. So it says, first of all, he's telling us, what type of daughter are we talking about? First of all, biktana, good morning, biktana, hakasim medaber. The verse is discussing a daughter who is a minor, which means, a minor means that she is under the age of 12 and a half. Okay, let's see. Yachal afila hevia simanim. You might think, No, don't worry, I'm fine, really I'm good. Thanks, no, it's good. You might think that even if the daughter had produced the signs of puberty, the father would have the right to sell her. So he tells, Rashi learned something very interesting here. He's jumping a little bit, and I'll share this with you orally. One of the ways that this girl goes free after she's been sold into slavery is once she does reach puberty. Any sign of puberty, even the beginning signs, she can show the signs or tell the signs, and then she's immediately set free. So Rashi says, if she is set free through the signs of puberty, then she definitely will not be able to be sold after that. Obviously, that doesn't make any sense. So we're talking about younger than that, right? Earlier than that, for sure. No question about that. That we know. But then, I want to, Rashi will tell us that we mean the earliest signs of puberty. We don't need many signs, just the earliest signs already. She's already let free. I want to go now to what it said. You see the bottom Rashi? She shall not go free like the release of the slaves. What is it talking about? So this is a halacha that we haven't learned yet. Okay, we're not talking about the Jewish slave who we said goes free after 6 years, because she does go free after 6 years, if that's what happens, if she ends up staying that long. Usually that's not what happens. But should it be that she ends up where she can stay till 6 years, in other words, Yovel didn't come in the middle, or she didn't reach her puberty, or there's a few other conditions, we'll see. She will go free after 6 years. So what does this mean? So this is talking about something interesting. There's a third set of slaves that we're not even going to be discussing now, and this is what we call Kiyetzias Avadim Knanim. That's the Canaanite slave. Now those halachos, I'm sorry, we're not going to go into today. So there's three categories of slaves. There's the Jewish male slave, there's the girl, this Amma, Ivria, this young girl, and then there's the non-Jewish slave.
So what age was she?
6 years old?
I could be young, very young.
Six
I guess so, till 12, yeah, very young. Again, there will, we're not going to see so much exact detail here, but there are specific halachas of what you're allowed to ask her to do, just like you, just like we said with the man, right? You can't do anything that's not dignified. She would be doing light housework. She wouldn't be doing anything that would be too difficult for her, perhaps light housework, taking care of babies. She wouldn't be doing anything which would be too much that you wouldn't ask another 10-year-old girl to do, or you understand that's how it would be.
They would get married at 13, 14.
Okay, so that's, yeah, in those days they would get married younger, definitely. And we'll see in a minute something fascinating also about marriage that comes in here. Okay, we'll see. Also, it'll be a bit difficult for us to relate to, but let's understand, let's see what the psukim say first. Okay, so here we say like this. There is a concept, as we said, there's a third category of slave, the non-Jewish slave. Now, the halacha for the non-Jewish slave is interesting. What? How do they go free? Okay, a non-Jewish slave, truthfully, can be bought forever. Okay, that's a different halacha. That doesn't go free after 6 years. They can be bought, and they will remain with you forever, so to speak. There's one way they do go free. If you harm them bodily, physically, so the example that the pasuk gives is if their tooth gets harmed, if their eye gets harmed, but it also Rashi tells us over there by those psukim, if another part of their body gets harmed, they go free. That's what happens to a non-Jewish slave. So if you do damage to them physically, then they're free. That's what it says. That's the halacha. But that doesn't apply to a Jewish slave or a Jewish maidservant. Very interesting. If you, by mistake, damage her teeth or her eyes, she will not go free. Let's see what Rashi says. That's what he says over here. Loiteitze kitzei sa'avadim, she does not go free like the release of the non-Jewish slave. Sheyoytzim b'shein v'ayin. That's the language used in the pasuk, who goes free because of the loss of a tooth or an eye. Okay, it's other parts of the body as well. There's a reason why it says tooth or eye, because tooth teaches us even something which you're not born with. Eye teaches us something which is permanent. Whatever it is, you know, so it's all different things. But the point is that we're not going into that. But if you do that to her, if you harm that by the her, she's not going to go free. Says, but this one should not go out through the loss of a tooth or an eye. Ella, Ayvedes Sheish, rather, she works for 6 years, or until the Yevil, just like the man, as we mentioned. But she has a third category, which might get her out earlier, Ay Achatavi Simanin, or until she will produce signs of puberty. Now, he says, as he says, V'chol HaKoidem, Koidem L'Cheirusa, whichever of these come first for her freedom. Now, what happens if her tooth or her eye does get damaged? So Rashi tells us something interesting, that the owner has to compensate her financially. So you have to pay for whatever the worth is. That we'll go into later when we talk about damages to a person. There is ways of how we ascertain what the financial worth is of an eye or what the financial worth is of a tooth. That's a separate halacha. So whatever it is that the Beis Din decides, that's how much you have to compensate her. So just want to share with you orally, we're not going to go into this whole Rashi inside this one. He does go through a little bit of a technicality and he says like this. Here we learn something else. We didn't mention this by the male slave, by the Jewish man slave. We didn't say anything about this. Rashi says that we learn that this halacha also applies to him. So if you're a Jewish man slave and you've been harmed with your tooth or your eye, just like the Jewish maidservant, just financial compensation. That's one thing. And we learned that because another pasuk puts the man and the woman, Jewish man and woman, slave together in the same pasuk. The other thing that we learn is that the girl does go out after 6 years, just like the man goes out after 6 years, because they're in the same pasuk somewhere else. So just a technicality, as we can see. I just want to see if there's anything else from this Rashi. No. Let's go now to the next pasuk. So far we have three ways that she can go. Either 6 years, or the fact that she has, not three ways, did we say three ways? Yeah, Yoivel, or she shows her signs. Okay, let's see something else that might happen to her. Sorry, the pasuk starts on the page before, right? Imra, now we have a very strange pasuk. I'll just read it, and then we'll try to understand. Imra, if she is displeasing, Rashi tells us, usually ra means bad. We're not talking, she's not bad. That's definitely not the translation here because it doesn't fit even into the context. If she's displeasing, displeasing to whom? Be'enei adoineha, in the eyes of her master. Okay, let me just clarify. We're not talking about that she's not doing her job well. What we're talking about, and this is a hard thing to understand, is that in the ideal, according to Torah, should this girl be sold by her father, and I'll tell you in a second how that could even happen, the ideal is that the person who buys her should actually marry her. That's the ideal. Okay, in Torah, let's see. So here at the pasuk, so we'll discuss it in a minute. I just want to clarify because we can't understand the pasuk. But what happens if he doesn't like her? I don't know. He says, I don't want to marry her. We won't make a good match. So what happens? And then it says like this, Asher lo ya'ada, that he did not designate her for himself. So he doesn't think that she is somebody that would make a, you know, that they would be happily married. So therefore, what should he do? There's another option. Perhaps he won't marry her, the Torah says. The hefta, first of all, he says, the hefta, he should have her redeemed. La'am nachri lo yimshal l'machra. He cannot sell her to a strange people, which Rashi tells us. He cannot just decide to sell her to his neighbor. I don't know, the neighbor says, I like her, I want to buy her. Not allowed. She cannot be resold. Okay, that's one thing. If a girl is sold, she's sold once and only once. It cannot happen again. Even if she's, you know, even if the possibility would exist, it's not allowed. Who's not allowed to sell her again? This is very interesting. Not the master who bought her and not her father. And only one time. One time is bad enough, but okay, but one time. The other thing is that he cannot definitely, cannot sell her to another Jew. He definitely cannot sell her to a foreign nation. So she can't be sold in any way. She can't be given away in that way as a slave to somebody else. Then he says something interesting. And he uses a very strong language. Bibigdoi ba, in his betrayal of her. So who betrayed whom here? This is very interesting. It's very ambiguous. And here we see again, we need the Gemara. The Gemara discusses and says, the one who betrayed her first is her father. That's true, he did. And why would he do such a thing? So the Gemara says the only way that this is possible, and it says the only way that he can halachically do this is if the father has sold every single thing that he owns, even the shirt off his back, literally has zero, minus zero, then there is this thing that you're allowed to do. You are allowed, because you're so desperate, you have nothing, you are allowed to sell your daughter. With the goal, what's the idea that the father has when he's selling his daughter? Well, obviously he needs the money so that they can feed maybe the rest of the family. But the real goal is, according to Torah, that you can see how it's written here, is that the owner will actually marry her. Why is that a good thing? Again, putting ourselves back into the times that we're talking about, we know that in those times, women did not work, women did not have any financial security, totally dependent upon the men, as we know. So either her father or her husband, right? That's how it worked in those days. Therefore, if he can't supply her, what he was hoping is that at least she would marry into a family where she would be taken care of, or where she would have that security. The very interesting thing here, I want to show you the next pasuk. Now this man that bought her also betrayed her. That's what it says. Because in buying her, he should already be aware that the intention is not to keep her as a simple maidservant. Rather, she should become his wife. And in a minute we're going to discuss what type of a wife we make out of her. Because in the world, if we understand, if somebody's a maidservant and then they become a wife, you would imagine that the way she would be treated, the way she would be looked at, would definitely not be equal to another wife. If you had a few wives, or even if you had one wife and she was the only one, perhaps the intention would be, why would somebody even do that, buy a girl and then like with the intention to marry her? Maybe because he thinks this way he won't have to treat her right. You can treat her a lot less than he would if he would marry somebody else. But Torah tells us something quite incredible, and we're going to see in a minute how she has to be treated. But before we go to that, let's look at the next pasuk. Yes, sure.
Can I ask, is there a big difference between a slave, female, and all these handmaidens?
Okay, so there's no woman slaves in Torah. Okay, so that doesn't exist. Okay, that's an interesting thing. There's no such thing. No such thing. Because she's going to go out when she turns 12 and a half, 13 at the latest, right? She's finished. And then there's no slave after that.
Well, she hopefully can't. Hopefully the owner's got her nice son.
That's it. So that's the next pasuk. Let's see Riva. So yeah. The real ideal would be, what would be the beautiful way that this would end up? Let's see in pasuk Tes. V'im livna yadena. If he will designate her for his son.
Oh,
so in a way that sounds a lot better because you hope the son is a lot more her age, right? So like a bit more of a more suitable. That's the real ideal. So what will happen? What did you say?
Could be much older.
He could be, exactly. Absolutely. He could be much older, or he could even be not that much older. And in those days, let's be honest, there were many people who did marry people of a much, you know, a bigger age gap. This was more common, much more common than it is nowadays. Again, see, we're looking at it from our eyes, which I understand, but it's a different social everything now than it was in those days, totally. But let's understand what he says here. So the next thing that might happen, he says, if he designates him for her son, then what happens? Kimishbat habonais yasela. He shall deal with her according to the law of the young woman. Very also not clear. Again, the Gemara tells us, what does this mean? What does he have to do with her? He has to treat her as an equal wife, as if he has married somebody that he has just, on his equal social, you know, financial level that he chose. And the way he would treat that woman, that's how he has to treat this girl. And it's very specific, actually. Actually, the Mefarshim tell us, we'll see in a minute, not just the basic need, the basic requirements, but actually, if he has another wife, so you know in Torah there was a thing where people did have two wives, and maybe that other wife came from a wealthy family, and she's used to shopping in the nicest stores, going to the best dressmakers, having the best material, you would think that woman will have all the clothing of silk and whatever, but this woman, she can have the cheaper because she's not used to it even. You might not even feel bad because you think she won't even feel bad. The Torah says no. The same exact way that the other wife is being treated, she has to be treated as well. And let's not forget where she's coming from. She's coming, I mean, to get into such a situation, she would be coming from a very difficult place. I mean, a place where she really had nothing. Below nothing. That's what she was used to. So here we see an interesting thing. And I'll show you, now that Torah is a bit more specific, what are the requirements that a husband has to give? So he says, in acheres yikachlai, if he decides to take another wife, which means he's married to this maidservant, and now he marries somebody else. So then we can really run into problems because now he can start to neglect the maidservant because he has this new wife who's more on his level, maybe, I don't know. So he says, She'eira ksusa v'ainasa layigra. Here are the three stipulations. So he says, her food, which is she'eira, ksusa is what covers her clothing, v'ainasa, and you see Rashi says, ainasa is, as we can see, all of the things that are all the marital relations. He has to make sure to ensure that she is treated in the same way, equally, given all of the things that the woman expects, all the things that the woman deserves to receive, that was stipulated in the ksuva, whatever it may be. The only difference is, this is something very interesting, what is the difference here in this wife and other wives? There's one difference in how they get married. Usually, in Torah we know that's also its own halachas, and there's lots and lots of discussions in the Gemara how you get married, but what we mean is, and it also sounds a bit terrible, but in Torah the wife is like an acquisition, right? So in Torah the word that's used is bought. So you give a ring, right? That's how we do it nowadays. You give a piece of jewelry, you give financial something, right? The husband has to give some type of financial thing. Here, very interesting, the money that the owner has paid the father, that's the money already, right? So in other words, that's the only difference. There's not going to be like a ring, so to speak, or an acquisition, because he has already acquired her. However, everything else will be exactly the same. That's what it says. So these are the halachas of this. I just want to finish the last pasuk of this topic. Then he says, Im shalosh eile lo yasela. If he doesn't do these three, what are these three? So let's see what he says. What are the three things? Whether he designates her as a wife, or for his son, or and here we have another very interesting thing, or he will deduct from her redemption fee, and she will thereby go free, and I'll tell you what that one is. If he doesn't do those three, the yotza chinam ein kesef, then she goes out free, no money. What does that mean? When she shows her sign. That's the one, that's the last one for the girl. In other words, if she reaches that age, then she goes out just because of that. Now, what was that third stipulation? We didn't discuss that yet. A very interesting thing. when we think of a slave, right, in our concept of a slave, a person purchases a slave, let's say they pay, I don't know how much they pay. They pay $100 and they get this person, and this person is there for them. What we look at is we think of the $100 as a payment to the one who owned the slave before, which means to us, in our mind, the $100 has nothing to do with the slave himself, right? That's how we look at it. So here the Torah tells us something very interesting. If a man sold his daughter, unfortunately, and the owner, not the owner, but the master, whatever you might want to call him, buys, so this wealthy man buys this girl, he pays $100. Very interesting thing that should happen in the ideal. In the ideal, every day that she is a slave is terrible. It's not a state she should be in. As you can see, she should be married to him, she should be married to his sons, the father should never have done it. So therefore the Torah gives another provision, and the Torah says that if the father manages, perhaps the money that he got for her, puts him on his two feet, and he gets a job, and he starts saving up, right? But you would think, he sold her, too bad, now she belongs to the owner. So the Torah says, no, no, no. If he wants to buy her back, then he, at any point he can buy her back. Not only can he buy her back, but he pays less than what he sold her for. How do you account? That's all. In other words, if she was served for 2 years, so you take off 2/3 of what he paid, and he only has to pay the master to 1/3 less, so to speak. So that makes it more able for him to buy his daughter back. Again, another provision to try very hard to get her out of this state. This is if she didn't marry the owner or didn't marry the master or didn't marry his son. So you see here, this is, as we say, this is not an easy concept for us to get our heads around, no question about it. How often it happens, I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like often at all. It seems even this whole thing of slavery didn't happen often. She, again, let's not forget that the girl is never sold because of something she's done wrong, like the man who stole, right? So this is a situation which would happen beyond very rarely, because what we would hope is that amongst Jews, if somebody's in such a poverty-stricken state, somebody will help him before he would sell his daughter. I mean, that's obvious. The only thing that we can say is perhaps if the father knows of somebody who is willing to marry his daughter, or the son is willing, and this is the way he's going to do it, where he's going to get this money and set him up, his family as well. So perhaps he would consider such a venture, because he would look at it as everybody's gaining. But otherwise, it's something which would very, very rarely happen. But in the spiritual sense, it has a lot of meanings. And let's understand, what does it symbolize? As we say, because even these halachas don't apply, they applied for a very short time, they would have taken place very, very rarely. Let's understand the more spiritual side. So if you look at your... Yes. The time of the first Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, no, I don't know, no. Only very short, it was a very short time. And if you think about it, during the time of Shlomo HaMelech, which was the beginning of the first Beis HaMikdash, we are told that the Jewish people were extremely wealthy. This wouldn't have happened then for sure. It could have been maybe for 100 years too. I don't know. It would have been maybe at the end, when all the, when the kings were getting so bad and all the enemies were fighting. But even still, it would have been a very, very, as I say, very rare occurrence.
But this is Torah. So
yes. So it's very interesting.
Mashiach will come.
No, this is not going to happen when Mashiach will come.
But this is Torah.
Yes. So very interesting, Reva. It's a very interesting question, because we say that Torah is on many levels. So the spiritual level is always there. That doesn't mean that the physical, you understand, doesn't have to happen in every single way. Do you understand? So practically, it doesn't have to happen. It can happen practically in a different way, so to speak, in the emotional way or in the spiritual way. And that's what we have to understand. What does this represent? And this represents something that we are all actually, it's actually an amazing thing. It's a very high level. Let's see what that means, a high level. Sounds a bit strange to say that, but let's see what it represents. So you know what we'll do? We'll go to, on your booklet that you have in front of you, right? There's a page 1, 2, and 3. Of course, I want to do page 3 first, leave it to me to staple it back, but because this will show us, because I don't want to leave this one without understanding what this means. So on page 3, you have, this is a very beautiful, this will give us a little bit, it's, do you see, Libra, yeah, that one. So page 3 in that booklet. Do you know what Rona on the other booklet you see there? Yeah, that's right. That's right. Page 3 in that. Okay, so let's see what he says over here. So this is in Yiddish, but I'll still read and translate because I want to show you very beautiful to understand what we how we understand it. So he says like this. First of all, I won't read the... I made a bracket over here. I'll start from Ches. It says a very beautiful thing, that the fact that these halachas are the first halachas mentioned after the giving of the Torah means that they are extremely fundamental. If you want to say, they are our mission in this world, right? They are the way that we can actualize and practically apply the giving of the Torah. Let's understand how. So Ches, you see on the bottom where there's a little Ches there, it's in the second column on page 72 toward all the way on the bottom. V'yumtak al pi pnimiyus ha'inyanim, it will be understood through the deeper, the way we look at it in a much more deep way, in a depth, in an innermost way. V'bal de ganzer mechuvan v'tachlis fun matan Torah. Since the whole purpose of the giving of the Torah and the receiving of the Torah is oif tzutan durch Torah mitzvahs, to accomplish through Torah mitzvahs, dem birur v'zichuch, the refinement, the elevation, in the inyanim von Welt, in all matters of this world, the physical world. In other words, the whole idea of Matan Torah is to affect, to refine the physical world. Therefore, if you go to the top of the next page, deriber, is der erster von die mishpatim. So therefore, the first of the laws, la'achar Matan Torah, after Matan Torah, is azat sivoy v'din, was in im zetzich begiloi, that in this halacha we will see in a revealed way, be Matan Torah poilt euch in gashmi yisraelam, how the giving of the Torah also affects the physical world. So let's see what that means. Und in dem drückt sich aus die Darges Havoida von an Eved Ivri. So this actually is... Yes, it's Yiddish. Sorry. I know you think, what's going on? I know. There we go. Yes, it is. Okay. So he says, so this actually comes, very interesting thing. This is emphasized in the levels, if you want, how does it show itself? Through the service, if you want, of what we call an Eved Ivri, right? This Jewish slave. V'teiris ha'chsidis is mevair di drei madregis Eved Knani, Eved Ivri, and Ama Ivria. So there are three levels, there are three different types, as we said. There's the non-Jewish slave, there's the Jewish slave, and there's the maidservant. And they are actually three levels in Avodas Hashem, in how we serve Hashem b'nefesh Adam, in the soul of man. What do they represent in our service of Hashem? Because we are all servants of Hashem. Let's understand how this works. So, first Eved Knani, the non-Jewish slave. Is there, what is he? What type of a slave? What type of work is that? What kind of person is that? Is there was their nefesh abahamis is by em bitakvai, as we say, of the behefkeira nechalei. It says, he is a person who his animal soul is there in all of its strength. And we have a very interesting term in the Gemara that a slave likes permissiveness, a very interesting term, which actually does mean, we know that when you take away the dignity of a person, they actually lose their own sense of dignity. Unfortunately, that's, we know psychologically, that's the way it works. So therefore, what this represents is a person who he might do the right thing. Let's see, he says, he might hold himself back, but what does he really want? He wants constantly to do the wrong thing. That's where he's constantly being pulled. As we see, he says, Un sitzich lemata zu taivas eilam haza, he's pulled to all of the indulgences, all of the desires of this world. Norer is kaifa atzme, but he forces himself. Un is oivid Hashem b'maiseb, and he serves God in action, b'payal mamish, just practically, b'sur meira v'aseita, he's both in not doing the wrong things and in doing the right things. Why? Mitzat kabbalas ol on eimas ha'adam, because of the yoke of heaven and the fear of the master. So this is the non-Jewish. So sometimes we think halavai we should be this, but this is the person who really doesn't want to be doing the mitzvah. He doesn't want to learn the Torah, but he does it because he has to, because he feels compelled, like a slave who's forced by the master to do the job. Doesn't feel any pleasure in it, doesn't see any benefit in it, it's just for, because the other one, if not, I don't know what might happen to me, right? That's the one level.
So we are the Kanani.
Well, let's hope not. Yes. Let's see, Riva. Let's see the next level. That's really what we're striving for. The Avoida von Eved Ivri. What's the Avoida of the Jewish slave? What does he represent? He says, is in a hechere darga. That's on a higher level. By im seinen meyer die midas von nefesh elikis. He already has allowed and is lit up in him all of the attributes, the beautiful attributes of the godly soul. And where are they? They are found not only remotely, subconsciously there, but he allows them to shine through also into his animal soul, which means into his consciousness. So he feels a little bit of a pleasure and a love of Hashem, a pleasure in a mitzvah. This doesn't mean that he doesn't want to do something wrong. Let's see. But when he does something right, he doesn't just do it because he's forced to do it. Let's see. He says like this. Bizas oich by dem nefesh abahamis is da tshuka la Hashem. Even in his animal soul, he has a yearning for Hashem. Eris aber noch nitnis hapich gevar in l'kdusha, but he hasn't transformed himself totally to holiness. As is ol nit haben ken chemda to taivas aylam haza, to the extent that he doesn't desire the worldly things, he still likes. You know, he still likes all the pleasures of this world, but he also has pleasure in the spiritual things. Most of us fit somewhere in this category where we enjoy Shabbos, we enjoy doing a mitzvah, we also enjoy a lot of the physical pleasures. We have both. This is what we call the Jewish servant, if you want to say. Because as an interesting thing, he says, just like the slave that he brings into the house, all of the needs, so to speak, all of the things that the master needs. But interesting, but he doesn't actually prepare it. He's not the cook usually, but he'll go out into the field, or he'll go to the market for you. He'll bring it in. It's not totally complete yet, but it's there in a certain stage. What's the highest level? The Avoida von an Ama Ivria, what does she represent, the Jew maidservant, is vos di taivis umidis von nefesh abahamis verinis hapich l'kdusha biz azayn tshuka is nor to elikos. Now, really, this is a level of a tzaddik. This is somebody who's transformed themselves, that all they want is godliness. So their entire animal soul is used, if you want to say, by the godly soul, and it's not only used, but it's literally been transformed and harnessed in a way which everything, the wanting, the desires, the excitement, it's all in holiness, in good things, in mitzvahs, in Torah, in serving Hashem constantly. Now, we're not on that level, but we can feel it sometimes, maybe on Yom Kippur, maybe on Shabbos sometimes. Sometimes we get a taste of the Ama Ivria. That's what we're striving towards, as we say. It is a whole different way of looking at it. Okay, so let's see what he says. Und der mit is moven, and because through this we understand, was die haschala von die mishpatim la'achar matan Torah, that the beginning of all the laws after matan Torah was thus bringt der reis die peula von matan Torah in welt, which obviously brings about the effect of matan Torah in the world, is mit die dinim von eved ivri. That's why we begin with these laws of the Jewish slave. Val thus is the haschalas ha'avayda von ha'idin la'achar matan Torah, because this is the beginning of our work after matan Torah. So let me tell you something interesting. It doesn't mention the non-Jewish slave, because that was even able to be done before matan Torah. But what matan Torah accomplished was that now we are able to start enjoying, if you want to say, spirituality, which means that we can take the spiritual and we can merge it with the physical. There isn't this, as we always said, there isn't this big, massive, you know, barrier and this two domains. And that's what we find in ourselves. We do have that, where we use, even on a simple level, you know, you walk into our home and a person, what do they put their nice tablecloth? They say, this is for Shabbos. What does that mean? That means that what do you want? You want your house to look nice on Shabbos. That's really a physical desire, to have the house looking nice. But where are you putting it? It's for Hashem. So you see, you're able to do that. That's the Eved Ivri, is able to do that. He still enjoys other things as well, but he's able. And this is the beginning of the work that we can start after we receive the Torah. That's what we're working on still, but this is the immediate, as we say, beginning of the merging of the physical and the spiritual. And as he says, so Pael Zainai Finefesh Abahamis, Uninyane Ha'ilam Bechlal, Azazel and Nishtaneverin, on Arayin Kumin and Rishus HaKdusha, right? That all of the normal day-to-day things should be to change, and they should also enter into the domain of holiness. Now we say on La'achar Zeh Kumter Hemshech B'Parsha, but then comes the continuation. The Hemshech HaAvayda, the continuation, what we're really striving towards. Er Kumtzuder HaAvayda von Amma Ivriya. He reaches the level of the Jewish maidservant, as men is Mahapech Dimidus V'Nefesh HaBahamis, that we actually transform the attributes of the animal soul, Uninyaneh HaAylam B'Chlal, and all the matters of this world. Azezal and Verin Adira Lo Yisparach, they themselves should become a dwelling place for Hashem. The truth is that the level of Amma Ivriya is discussed in Chassidus Men, is a very high level, and we will all reach it when Mashiach will come, but we have a touch, we strive, we know it exists. And as we say, at certain points in our life, we engage in that. So that's the goal, if you want to say. This is from the Rebbe. This is a sikha from the Rebbe. Yeah. So a very beautiful way, you understand, a whole different way of looking at what these means. This is what it means to us, so to speak. This is what the Jewish slave and the Jewish maidservant, you want to say, means to us. But I want to show you something. We'll see something very beautiful. If we have any time, I think we have a little bit of time. In your other sheet, I want to see it even a little bit more in the words, another beautiful way that Ora Chaim says. He says it in a more global way. So sorry, I know again I stapled it all wrong. Page 2. Going backwards. Let's look at page 2. Let's see a little bit of the Ora Chaim. The Ora Chaim HaKadosh explains it really, really beautifully. This is symbolic of the Jewish people. Let's understand what the Jewish people have to do with the Amma Ivriya and our whole history and our whole destiny. So it's page 2. Yes, is it the beautiful? He says, Oy Tirmes HaParsha, perhaps this Parsha alludes to Al Zeh HaDerech in this way. V'chiyim kar ish, if a man will sell. Who's this man? Zeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is quite harsh in a way. Who sold his daughter? The Ora Chaim says Hashem sold his daughter. Who is the daughter that Hashem sold? As he says, Uma HaKdosha, his holy nation. He sold us. He put us in Golus. He sold us. La'ama, as a maidservant. Perish liyos shekfar avru golius al Yisrael. Since we have, unfortunately, we have experienced many different exiles. Golus Mitzrayim, Golus Bavel, right? The exile in Egypt, the exile in Babylon. The chulam loy nishtabdu Yisrael ella le'uma achas. In those exiles, we were only enslaved to one nation. The end of Rezeh Soivev Kriyas Shem Avdus Al Yisrael. Really, that doesn't make us into slaves. When we are just subjugated to one nation, it's not so bad. The Ora Chaim says, when did the Jewish people become maidservants? When did Hashem do this act that we consider such a negative thing of the father to do? It is in our golus. What's the difference in our golus? Let's see. He says, "Aval begolus hachel sha'anu bay." This present golus that we find ourselves in now, ata mishtabdim Yisrael l'chol ayin umais, where we are slaves to all the nations. He says, "Bechol makam asher sham ivri bazoihu." Wherever a Jew finds himself, he is looked down. There's no question. He's always mistreated, no matter what. Whether it be openly or a little bit hiddenly. But whatever, it comes out eventually. We are not treated the way other people are treated and looked at the way other people are looked at. We are definitely looked down upon. And this is, in this Golus, the worst, it's by everybody. And he says, V'chayzer l'kutei basar l'kutei. This is constant, like they, one nation repeats after the next nation. Wherever we find ourselves, they learn from the previous. They learn how to do it even better, so to speak. And then he says, V'davar zeh yinaseh v'yisamein bahem b'nisayin gadol v'simin muvak. And this, he says, actually is a terror. It's a very big test. It's a very challenging thing that we have been through as a Jewish nation in this present exile. What Hashem has done to us is worse than he's ever done, he says. V'hu aimrei le'ama. That's why he calls us a maidservant. Ki umaseinu b'golo zeh kanso shem ama. Now, we have become slaves. The Jewish people now have the identity again as slaves, which they didn't have, he says, even in the previous exiles. This is the most that they have that identity. We are never free. even if we think about it, even now in our own country, we're not free, right? Nobody looks at it as if it belongs to us. We are considered, I don't know, as we say, in a way, there more than anywhere else, they look at it as if we don't belong there. So you can see, as the Aruch Hayim says, how much, if you want to say, Hashem has sold us and to the lowest level as a maidservant. Let's see what he says. And then, but obviously, the go is not going to be forever. So he says, so now he says, since this is the case, even when we will be redeemed, right, when Mashiach will come, right, and our souls will be redeemed, we have become slaves. So therefore, Hashem has to do something. What will he do? So Hashem has made us a promise. Ki geulas ha'uma halaz loy tiyeh k'derech asher ha'itziyanu Hashem in Mitzrayim. That when Hashem redeems us this time, it will not be the same way as when he redeemed us from Egypt. What will be different? Let's see what's the difference. Ella bin nisim muflogim. The miracles will be way beyond. They will be something that's never been. Bepirsum, very, very publicly. Bechol ha'olam. There will be no place in the world that will not be aware of the miracles that Hashem does as he redeems us. The one thing we can say on a simple level, the Aruch Hayim lived 500 years ago, right? So he was before the 1600s. He was before any technology. If we think about it now, we don't have the Geula. Hashem has to bring Mashiach. But what we can see is now the preparation. Right now we see Hashem is showing us some of the signs, right? Some of the things of what will happen. So let's say now, when we have any miracle that happens to us, whether it be a Jew anywhere in the world or in the land of Israel, right? Immediately, the entire world is aware of it. It is done in a miraculous way, many things that sometimes even they can't get their head around, even though they want to, and everybody to the far-flung corners of the earth, there is nobody that is not aware and doesn't feel affected. And this is also such a strange thing that I always wonder. Why? I mean, we all wonder, but this is the way Hashem made it. Why is it that such a small country makes always the headline news? I mean, who in Australia really should care about Israel? Why should they? There's nothing to do with them. But for some reason they do, right? For some reason, we make the headline news wherever. This is part of it, because the miracles that Hashem does for us will be known, as he says, everywhere, because we were enslaved everywhere. And Hashem wants to transform that and redeem us. The only way is by publicly, everywhere where a Jew is found, there is, the so to speak, the awareness that Hashem is miraculously taking care of us. And let's see how the Aruch Hayim continues, but really when Mashiach will come, then it will be for sure. We're everywhere, he says, we're going to have to continue next week, just to do another 2-3 lines. She will not, remember we said she doesn't go out like the slaves go out, you know, with the eye and the tooth, that's a shein v'ayin, remuzim v'tayr that are hinted in the Torah and Beis Avodim. What does that mean? She'oz lo'y hifli Hashem plo'av, ela bu'ma'achas. It's referring to the fact that when we were redeemed from slavery in Egypt, we were redeemed from one nation. Now, it's true that the world knew about it, but who was affected? Only Egypt. Here the Aruch Hayim says, Hashem is promising us, when Mashiach will come, the miracles will take place everywhere. Everywhere in the world will be affected by the miracles that will happen. So it will be a very, very different type of going out, as we say. Says then when Mashiach will come, it will be in the entire world. It says that the kings will become the ones who serve you, and the officers will be the ones who will nurse you. That will be when Mashiach will come. The entire world, everything will be totally the opposite. Now they think of us as their slaves. Then we will be their masters. They will look up to us as their masters. That's what will happen when Mashiach will come, and this will be all over the world. V'yishtachvu kol malchei aretz. All the kings of the world will bow down to us. K'chosav b'sefer Yeshaya, as it says in Yeshaya. I want to continue next week. We're going to see the Aruch Hayim continues, and he actually shows every detail of the halachas of the maidservant, how it will apply, how it applies. Very beautiful. So we'll see him, Ritz Hashem. We'll continue.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm here with you.